This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World Show. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode number 117. Sorry this show is a little bit later than usual. I was in Las Vegas all last week on business and didn't get a chance to play much in Vegas, but that's okay because playing in Las Vegas can be detrimental to your health, I guess, in a couple of different ways, and detrimental to the pocketbook. But I'm back. The problem is when I came back home from my Vegas business trip, I brought home some kind of a nasty sickness. Just today, I got my voice back, so that's why I'm just now doing the podcast. Today is Monday, the 11th of April. You'll probably hear this late tomorrow or Wednesday, depending on when you download it. Going to talk about holsters in this show. If some of you have been keeping up with me on the forum, you've noticed that I have mentioned that High Noon Holsters contacted me a few weeks ago, actually about a month ago. They saw my YouTube video that I did on the Hidden Ally holster, and I did it with my Glock 19. And Alex was impressed with it, and he called me up and asked me if I would be willing to review two of his holsters. So I gladly accepted. So that's primarily what I'm going to talk about. I got a few other subjects, a really cool subject to talk about here real quickly. So I'll get to the main topic in probably 5 or 10 minutes. Now, I've got a few announcements, but folks, don't skip through these announcements because I want to announce something really special. First of all, I want you to pay particular close attention to next week's show, which is probably going to air next Monday or Tuesday. I have a commitment that Gabe Suarez of Suarez International is going to join me on that show. He and John Payne are going to get on here and do an interview with me. Now, if you remember, the last few weeks I've had John Payne on here twice, talking about the close-range gunfighting class that he's going to be teaching here in Dallas, May 28th and 29th. Well, Gabe is coming on to talk about it as well. I need you to do me a favor, folks. I'd like to have some real good questions for Gabe Suarez to answer. For those of you who might not know, if you're kind of new to training with handguns, if you're kind of new to this show, Gabe Suarez is the founder of Suarez International. He's a pretty good trainer. Just Google Gabe Suarez or Google or go to www.suarezinternational.com and check it out. So do me a favor. Send me by direct email. Don't put them on the forum. Send me by direct email some questions that you would like me to ask Gabe Suarez and John Payne on that interview next week. Okay? You can email me at bob@handgunworld.com. bob@handgunworld.com. And that brings up the fact that the website is www.handgunworld.com. And also don't forget to join me on the Gun Rights Radio Network forums. Good people on those forums, excellent source of information. Also don't forget to listen to the other podcasts on the Gun Rights Radio Network. A lot of good ones on there. And I want to give a shout out to a couple of podcasts that are on the network that I've really been enjoying lately. As always, I like to listen to Eric's Handgun Podcast on the Gun Rights Radio Network. It's a fantastic show. Haven't listened to the most recent episode yet, but by the time you listen to this, I probably will hear it. I love the Personal Armament Podcast with Rob Robideau, but he hasn't done much lately, and I'm kind of missing it. So, hey, Rob, how about some more shows? That'd be kind of cool. The Urban Shooter Podcast with Ken Blanchard is excellent. I get a lot of information. I love listening to Ken Blanchard. That's cool. I love the Pro Arms Podcast. Listen to that just about every chance I can get. You know, those guys are so knowledgeable. I mean, it's just unbelievable the wealth of knowledge that the team over at Pro Arms has and what they're willing to share with us. And yes, folks, I too listen to the Gun Dudes. I mean, what can I say? They're fun to listen to. They're hilarious, man. I love it. It's great stuff. All right. So anyway, there's a shout out to some of the other shows on the network. Now, one more thing I want to say in the announcements here. I don't like to make this show commercial, but there's a lot of exciting stuff coming up here for the Handgun World Show that I got to get out to you guys. I've also been given the approval to give away a free ticket to close-range gunfighting. It's a $400 class, folks. May 28th, 29th. If you live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area or North Texas, or if you don't mind traveling to Dallas-Fort Worth area, you could win a free ticket to the class. Here we go. Here's all you have to do. Most of you know that I have version number 2 of my Shooters Club podcast. It's already out. It's been out for a few weeks now. Several of you have made the investment. It's only $15. It helps out my show. If you get your copy of the Shooters Club podcast, and you can find that at handgunworld.com, it's only a $15 investment. The first thing you're going to get is a couple of hours of excellent ideas on how to become a better shooter and concealed carry ideas. You're also going to get a raffle ticket for the drawing to get a free ticket to close range gunfighting with Suarez International. On May 16th, I am going to do the raffle. This time I'll do it electronically. I'll email you some ticket numbers, and then I will announce the ticket numbers on this show, the one ticket number, who's going to win. Now, there's only going to be one winner, all right? But I think I'm going to throw in a few things. So between now and the next podcast, I'm going to think of some things that I'm going to throw in so we can have a couple of other winners that'll win some other items. Now, if you want to buy extra tickets, they're only $15, but I'm going to limit them to 5 tickets per person. Only 5 per person. I want to give as many people as I can a chance to win a ticket. So that's all you have to do to get into the drawing to win a free ticket to close-range gunfighting, May 28th and 29th, put on by Suarez International, and the instructor will be John Payne. So you can kill 2 birds with 1 stone. You can support my show and my efforts here on the Handgun World Show, and then you can have a chance to win an excellent training class. By the way, John did tell me the class is half full already. Means he's going to take about 10 more people, and that's it. And then he's going to have to cut it off at about 20 students. So we've got 10 signed up already, folks. It's going to be a good course. Okay, so that's it for the announcements. Let me get into the main topic. I want to talk about holsters, specifically these 2 High Noon holsters. What I requested was an appendix carry holster for my Glock 19 and another appendix carry holster for my Carr PM9. So Alex at High Noon Holsters, and by the way, their website is www.highnoonholsters.com. He sent me a holster called an Alter Ego. Excuse me, folks. My voice is breaking up a little bit there. I'm still trying to recover from this cold that I got. He sent me the Alter Ego. Now, don't worry about trying to remember this stuff. Just go to handgunworld.com and look at the links underneath each podcast posting, and you'll be able to see exactly what I'm talking about. The Alter Ego is a leather holster. Now, there's some excellent benefits about this holster that I really, really like. There's a couple things I'll point out that I think are slight weaknesses. Overall, I got to say, these 2 holsters are fabulous. If you're not a Kydex person, then I would strongly suggest that you check out High Noon Holsters for leather holsters. They're terrific. The wait time on most of their holsters is not very long. Some of these are in stock. The Alter Ego is in stock. So, and the other one I'm going to talk about is a special order item, but you're not going to be sitting here waiting 26 weeks to get your holster, okay? You know, that frustrates me. I mean, there's a lot of good holsters out there, but doesn't that kind of frustrate you? You know, you order something or you lay your money out there, you want to get it, don't you? Instead of waiting 26, 30, I've heard sometimes 34 weeks. Not with High Noon Holsters. Their turnaround time is a lot quicker than that. So the Alter Ego is a tuckable holster as well. At first they sent me the holster called the Public Secret. I sent it back and said I wanted something that rides a little bit lower. Now, if you like a high ride appendix carry holster, get the Public Secret. It's a straight drop. Okay? You want a straight drop holster for appendix carry. You don't want a canted holster for appendix carry. And for those of you who don't know what appendix carry is, basically you're carrying that gun right over your appendix at about the 130 position approximately. I like that method of carry. I got to be honest and straightforward with everybody, and that is that lately I have been carrying more at the 330 position. But I do appendix carry, especially my car PM9. That gun is such a dream to carry in the appendix position. And folks, the draw is faster. It just is. It's just a faster draw. And I have found, it may not work for you, but I've found that I can carry a decent-sized pistol, appendix carry, and it doesn't print very much. You got to find the sweet spot, but it works. I will say appendix carry is not for new shooters, and it's not for people that don't have a disciplined trigger finger. You better train, and you better train a lot from the appendix carry position if you're going to try it. You better double check and triple check that your gun is unloaded and practice your draw a couple thousand times and make sure that you don't accidentally press the trigger when you're drawing. Pressing the trigger from the appendix carry position by mistake can have absolutely disastrous consequences. But if you're disciplined and you're keeping your finger off the trigger like you're supposed to, it's not that bad. I do it, folks. I do it, and I don't want to do anything that ever endangers my life. I have no problem appendix carrying. If you have the right holster. And let me tell you why I like the Alter Ego. Now, the Alter Ego rides lower. I like to have an appendix carry pistol ride as close to the belt as I can get it, but still let me get a decent grip on the pistol. Okay? I don't like for the grip of the gun to ride right on my belt, because then the draw is too slow. I like it to ride about a half to three quarters of an inch above my belt. The Alter Ego, for my body, worked better. The Public Secret might work better for you. They're essentially the same holster. One of them is tuckable, one of them is not. Tuckable is not a big feature for me. I don't use the tuckable feature on any holster. But if you do, you're going to want the Alter Ego. Fabulously built holster. The first thing I want to talk about is the sight track. In the holster, there's a track. There's a track, I think it's made of plastic. But what's really cool is it gives an excellent space for your sights, no matter what sights you have on the pistol. I mean, I have excess big dots on one of my G19s, and it's got no problem because the sight track keeps the sight from snagging inside the holster and keeps it from getting damaged inside the holster. Very, very important feature. A lot of leather holsters don't have that, especially the cheap soft leather holsters on the market. They're not going to have a built-in sight track, which I really, really like as that feature. The other thing that I like is the reinforced mouth of that Alter Ego. High Noon Holsters does a terrific job. I don't know what they're reinforcing with it. It's probably synthetic material, but it stays open. And I think that's very important for appendix carry. A lot of talk has been made about reholstering. Now, let me say something about reholstering. There's never a reason to reholster your gun fast. That is where a lot of problems occur, is people are careless or they reholster way too fast. Why? Why do you need to reholster quickly? What you'll learn in close-range gunfighting, if you go, is reholster reluctantly. Don't be in a hurry to put your loaded pistol back in your holster. I mean, God forbid, if something happens, if you're in some kind of a gunfight, I hope you're not. I say that almost every podcast. I hope it never happens. But you better be ready if it does. Well, make sure all the threats are gone before you reholster. And then, if you do reholster, do it very, very carefully and be reluctant about it. Because you never know what threats might be there that you cannot see. So there's not a hurry, folks. Not a hurry to put that gun back in, even in competition. You know, it's been said many times, but I'm going to repeat it. Even in the competition arena, not one single award or classification is given out to the shooter who can reholster the fastest. The timer's already stopped after you fired your last shot. It doesn't keep running while you're trying to reholster your gun. Besides that, in competition, after you finished shooting, they're going to make sure your gun's unloaded anyway before they allow you to reholster it. But I like the reinforced mouth. That's what I like because the holster stays open. It stays open, it doesn't collapse. It makes it so much easier to one-handed reholster. But there's another reason why I like that reinforced mouth. And as I'm driving along here, folks, I do this show a lot while I'm driving. And I just got a little distracted there for a minute because some guy cut me off. I don't suffer with road rage, folks, but some of the pinheads out here who drive, especially here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, they just, I don't know, some of them have their head up there, you know what. But this is a family-friendly show, so I won't go any farther than that, but I just got a little distracted there. Okay, there's another reason why I like the reinforced mouth. I believe, at least for me, is that I think it helps conceal the gun better. I think the reinforced top of the holster makes the holster sit up against, tighter up against my body. I've compared this. I've compared this to soft, collapsible leather holsters. Any Kydex holster or any leather holster with a reinforced mouth seems to hold the pistol closer to my body because it prevents the pistol, it helps to prevent the pistol from flopping out. If any of you ever tried to conceal a pistol sometimes, if you don't have the right belt or the right holster, and I'm going to get into belts here in this podcast, because High Noon's belts are fabulous. If you don't have the right belt and the right holster, that gun can flop out on you. Especially small guns, like my Car PM9. If you carry a small gun of that type, it's really easy for it to flop. Not so with the reinforced mouth. So I really like that. That's a cool feature, and it's very, very well done by High Noon Holsters. Now, there's a couple things that Alex wanted me to cover with you about their holsters. And this is important stuff. First of all, it's got a rough side out design. So the holster is smooth leather on the inside and rough leather on the outside. I really like that. I like that for two reasons. You want the smooth leather on the inside. I think it's easier on your gun, first of all. And I think it makes the draw quicker. And it's got so much more grip to the smooth side out. And so for an inside-the-waistband holster, the smooth side out, it might look nicer, but the holster is going to slide more. It's going to slide more up and down and sideways on you. With the rough texture on the outside that High Noon puts on their holsters, it keeps that holster in place. That's what you want. You want it to stay in place. You want it to stay in place for numerous reasons. You know, think about this. If you dress a certain way to conceal carry your pistol, if that holster shifts 1 inch, it could make you start to print. I've noticed that on me. If my holster shifts, it starts to print. Because what I've done is I've dressed a certain way to where it conceals the best. And it's especially noticeable if you're carrying a sizable gun. If you're carrying a full-size Glock or a full-size 1911 or a full-size Beretta and you're trying to conceal that, you don't want it shifting much. And the guys that draw their weapons for a living, they want the rough side out. They know that that's what works. Okay, rough side out wins. Okay, and why do you need to have a fancy look anyway? I mean, there's a lot of beautifully done leather holsters. I mean, there are some gorgeous holsters on the market with nice, smooth, decorated leather on the outside. And they look pretty. They really look pretty. But, you know, I've always asked a question. Unless you're going to open carry, who cares what your holster looks like? I mean, it's concealed, right? So, who cares? So, I'm going to tell you right up front that the High Noon holster's rough side out doesn't look as cool, but it's functional. And that's what I look for. I look for functionality. Who cares what it looks like unless you're going to open carry? And again, folks, I'm not speaking from a law enforcement perspective here because, as you know, I'm not a law enforcement guy. I'm not ex-military. I'm not ex-law enforcement. I'm not a firearms trainer. I'm not a gunsmith. I'm just a regular guy. I'm just a salesman with a gun, folks. I'm a Yankee that grew up in New York City, raised in Wisconsin, moved to Texas several years ago, and I sell electronic security products for a living. I cover two states. So I am just an ordinary guy, and I talk to you about a civilian perspective on this stuff, okay? So maybe if you're in law enforcement or military, maybe your needs are a little bit different. But still, most serious professionals like the rough side out. A second feature that High Noon does very nicely is they mold the holster to your specific gun. So it's a leather holster made for your specific gun. There's advantages and disadvantages. to that. Here's the advantages. It means that the gun that you have it shaped for, it's going to stay in there. You know, there's something about a molded holster that's molded to your gun. A lot of Kydex holsters are made that way. It helps the retention. It helps keep that gun in there. And, you know, that's what you want. Again, you want that good retention, but when you go to draw, you want it to also draw smoothly. And High Noon has figured that out pretty well. Okay, and you'll notice if you get one of these holsters, you'll be able to see an imprint of your gun, of parts of your gun, inside that holster. I thought that was really cool when I got that. The disadvantage is no other gun's going to fit in that holster. So, you know, you can't just switch guns and make it fit. It's been molded to your specific type of weapon. I think it's more of an advantage than it is a disadvantage. I mean, you know, you may disagree. I don't know. I'd love to hear your comments on that. But that's my two cents on it. I covered the sight track before and the reinforced mouth. Now, I want to talk about their clips on their holster. The kind that I got for review both had the belt clips, not the straps, but the clips. High Noon's clips are the absolute best of any holster maker I have ever seen, including Comtech and Crossbreed and all of them. They use a very strong and very well-designed metal clip. Take a look at it on their website. It is strong. It does not break. I have had holsters before with clips, both metal and Kydex, and they broke. This thing is very, very... there's an all-steel reverse J-hook. And all I can say is if you get one of these, or you get a chance to look at one of these, stick your finger underneath that hook. It'll pinch you. That's how tight it is. It's good. The other feature that I really like about these holsters is that all of them give you a good combat grip. Let's talk about the hideaway for a minute. I also evaluated the hideaway. It's a small little leather holster designed very similar to the Alter Ego. It doesn't have some of the bells and whistles like the sight track and so forth. But it's high quality leather. Once again, rough side out, reinforced mouth. It stays open. I carried my Kar PM9 in that. Now, I carried both of these guns for nearly a month in these holsters. Even shot a competition match with these holsters. So, you know, folks, I don't like to review products that I haven't used. So I can honestly review these High Noon holsters and I can give you a very objective review because I've used these now. Almost 30 days. Just a little bit short of 30 days I've been using these. The Hideaway also is a clip holster. And it's terrific. Now, one of the things that I also want to say, the retention on both of these holsters is outstanding. What I did, and by the way, I'm going to do a YouTube video on all this too. I promised High Noon Holsters I would do a YouTube. So you'll be able to see some of this about a few days from now. Check my YouTube channel, Handgun World Show on YouTube, and you'll be able to see both of these holsters in high definition on my YouTube channel. And I'll talk about everything I'm talking about on this audio podcast, but it'll also have more meaning to you if you can see it. I stuck my gun. I made sure it was unloaded, of course. Put my gun in both of these holsters. Then I grabbed the holster by the bottom of it and turned it upside down. I had to literally shake my gun out of that holster. It simply would not come out. And I thought, well, at first I thought, well, that's not a good thing. Because it's going to be really tough to draw my gun. It wasn't. I don't know how High Noon does it. Maybe they do it. Maybe that's the secret of molding the gun to the holster. I don't know. Again, I don't know how they do it, but the retention is tremendous, but the draw is easy. And I like that. Okay, so I got a little off track there, but let's get back to the combat grip. A good holster will give you a full firing grip on it, or what's also called a combat grip. And what that means is you know, you get your whole hand on the gun and you draw it in one motion. And your middle finger should be just at pants level without getting in the way of your pants line. Okay? So what it means to you is you should be able to draw your gun and comfortably fire it without having to shift the position of your hand on the gun in order to get a better grip on it. Now, with that said, High Noon Holsters does manufacture holsters that ride much lower. They'll ride right down by your belt line. They do make holsters like that. I don't recommend them. I hope I don't hurt any High Noon sales by saying this, but you guys know that I'm straight up with you. As much as I know about what I'm reviewing, and of course I know a little bit about these holsters here because I've been using them, I don't care for any holster that allows my gun to ride so low that the grip is touching the belt line. High Noon makes those. A lot of holster makers do. And some of the modular holsters out there, you can adjust to ride that low. I don't suggest it. It's too hard to get a quick combat firing grip. You've got to think about not just concealment, folks. You've got to think about what if you have to use your pistol. Doesn't that make sense? What if you have to use that thing? You're going to want to be able to draw that and get the best combat firing grip you can get on that gun, don't you? And I think that's the importance of a good holster design. The High Noon holsters, that both of them that I tried, do give you a very good combat grip on your pistol. All right, just my opinion. Your mileage might vary. I don't know, but that's my two cents. Also, on both these holsters, High Noon builds in a real nice tension screw. And, you know, at first I looked at that and I went, when I first got these holsters, as I did with my other High Noon products, I thought, tension screw? I'm not going to need that. I was wrong. Excuse me, for it, folks, on my voice here. It's starting to crack a little bit. I may have to stop here and put a little pause in this and get a little drink. But, yeah, the tension screw did make a big deal. All right. There was a little pause there. I had to get a drink, and I had to grab a phone call. You might not hear too much of a pause. I've tried the best I can to kind of smooth it out a little bit. But let's get into the tension screw. You know, I didn't think I was going to need it at first. But, you know, it's kind of like at first the holster was real tight. And so I loosened the tension screw almost as loose as I could get it without the screw falling out. But then after the holster broke in a little bit, then I had to tighten the tension screw up a little bit. So it's definitely a necessary item, and I like the way that High Noon has designed it. I think it's a good feature, and I hope that they keep on building their holsters that way. I think it's good, and you know, sometimes it's needed, some not. But I think it's better to have it there just in case you need to tighten it up a little bit. Because as the holster broke in, I felt that I needed to tighten it up just a little bit just to make sure that good retention that they're known for is still in place. Okay? So remember, you know, one of the things about that tension screw is that everybody pretty much has different strengths and shapes to their body. And, you know, people are different ages and they have different injuries that they've sustained and so forth. And some have different preferences. So what might be a sloppy draw to one person might be a real tight draw to another. And that's why I think it's better to have that tension screw there than to not have it. Because, I mean, you know, if you get a holster that's not adjustable like that and it's a sloppy draw, then what are you going to do? You know, or if it's too tight of a draw, what are you going to do? You're kind of stuck. So I think that's a really good feature right there. All right, so that's a little bit about the holsters that I reviewed. Very good. They're very comfortable, too. One of the things I like about these holsters is that they're comfy. The only comfortable Kydex holster that I've ever been able to wear is the Dale Fricke Archangel holster, which is a terrific Kydex holster. I tell you what, though, for my Glock, the Dale Fricke and the High Noon holsters Alter Ego are about the same. I didn't notice any difference. I got to say, for my car PM9, that little High Noon hideaway holster is sweet. It is nice. Nice and the absolute most comfortable holster that I've ever used for appendix carry for that pistol with the best retention and the reinforced mouth. I mean, I don't think it can be beat. I really don't. I mean, I haven't seen anything on the market for appendix carry now. I put the caveat on there for appendix carry, straight drop. Haven't seen anything better than the hideaway for my car PM9. And that Alter Ego is fantastic. So, if you're looking for an alternative to Kydex, and Kydex doesn't work for everybody, I understand that. If you're looking for it, I highly, highly recommend the either the Public Secret or the Alter Ego by High Noon Holsters. And you know what? The other thing I like about High Noon is they make a holster for almost every gun out there. As a matter of fact, High Noon was the only manufacturer that my friend James Kimmerly could find for his left-handed Beretta PX for subcompact. It's the only place he could find a left-handed holster for the Beretta PX4 subcompact, left-handed. So, you know, I mean, their holster selection and their gun selection is just outstanding. Okay? Now, let me talk about their belts. Boy, you know, I've gotten a lot of questions from people who listen to this show about belts. And I cannot honestly find a belt better than the High Noon Holsters belt. Now, I have not tried any belts from any of the other manufacturers like Mitch Rosen or Milk Sparks or some of the other good leather manufacturers out there. But I got Alex to send me a belt as well, and he calls them rock steady belts. Let me tell you what, that is no lie. First of all, I couldn't believe the thickness of this belt. And you'll see it on the YouTube video. I'll point that out to you on YouTube once I get around to making it. The thickness is outstanding. It is a reinforced belt. The inside, I believe, is probably some kind of a kydex or synthetic material. You know, I've been a real big proponent of the kydex reinforced leather belts, kydex lined leather belts before. And there's another place up in Oklahoma City I've been buying them from, but they're a lot cheaper and they're wearing out quicker. They're wearing out a little bit longer than I, or a little bit quicker than I wanted them to wear out. I don't think this High Noon holster will ever wear out. I mean, this High Noon belt will ever wear out. I mean, gosh, this thing, in fact, let me tell you how sturdy it is. Okay? I probably got a size a little bit too large. I've lost about 11 pounds lately. So, hey, it's a good thing, right? I've lost 11 pounds. The bad news is I ordered a belt from High Noon when I was 11 pounds heavier. Well, I wanted to have an extra hole put in this belt. And so I went to a leather shoe repair guy that I know does a pretty good job. Well, he put an extra hole in this belt for me. But when he came back, he handed the belt back to me. He goes, "Where'd you get this thing?" And I told him, "So Alex, I put in a plug for you at High Noon Holsters." I said, "I got it from their belt selection." He goes, the shoemaker guy says, "I have never put a hole in a belt that thick and that hard to punch through since I've had this shop open." And you might think, well, a really sturdy belt like that is uncomfortable. No, it's not uncomfortable. It's fabulous, and it looks great. It looks like any of the dress belts I have. It's got a beautiful gold buckle on it, and it's excellent. I worked that trade show last week. It was a business environment, and I had business clothes on, and I wore this High Noon belt, this black one. I got it in black, and it looks fabulous. It looked just like a good leather belt, leather dress belt. So that's another thing that I really liked about it. Can't say enough about them. And you know, the importance of a belt is so important. People overlook that. I really do. I think belts are underplayed too much in concealed carry. The stiffness of the belt and a belt that's designed for carrying a gun is so important. And you got manufacturers like High Noon and many others out there that are making belts that look good, that also carry your gun well. You know, the stiff belt helps hold the gun inside closer to your body. The advantage of the gun being held tight to your body is less printing. And, you know, bottom line, one of the biggest reasons why your gun might print too much is you got to look at your belt. You got to examine whether your belt is fit for the task. You know, a skimpy little leather dress belt is not going to cut it. It's just simply not going to cut it. I do love my Wilderness Tactical belt. That's great, but it doesn't look very good for dress. So that's my casual belt. This High Noon Holsters is my dress gun carrying belt. And yes, folks, I do carry my gun when I'm doing business. All right? I will just leave it at that. But, you know, in closing, I just want to say, I doubt this thing's ever going to wear out. I might buy one more belt from High Noon Holsters to get one in brown because, you know, I need that brown color for some of the clothes and pants that I wear. But I'm not going to have to buy another belt to replace this one for a while, I can tell you that. And by the way, it holds its shape, too. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't bend. You know how some belts you get those bends in them after you've worn them for a long time? You know, you get the, they start to lose their shape. I don't think this one's going to because of the way that it's designed. And they also taper them if you want more of a tapered belt. I just got the standard one, but again, I think it's outstanding. So check out their belts as well. Now, I want to talk pricing. I'm going to refer you to their website. Okay, I am not going to quote prices here on this show because they do a good job on their website of putting everything out there. You're not going to find that High Noon is a discount holster house. They're not. You know, you're going to pay a slightly above average price, I would think. Well worth it. All their stuff is first rate. Their customer service is good. Their warranty is good. They'll make it right. You know, when they sent me these for evaluation, I didn't like one of them. They very, very quickly and very graciously changed it out for another. And I was real happy with that. And by the way, one thing I forgot to mention on their belts, I'm looking at a few notes here. Their belts are individually handmade. And they're constructed from two pieces of 6 to 7 ounce leather. So this is a handmade product, folks. At least their belts are. You know, so even though you're going to probably invest a little bit more than average, it boils down to this. How much is your life worth? That's what you got to think about. How much is your life worth? This is concealed carry stuff. This is stuff that is going to save your life. It's life-saving equipment. Get good stuff. So once again, a big shout out to High Noon Holsters. Great stuff. Thank you for letting me review. And Alex at High Noon Holsters, thank you for giving me this opportunity. Folks, be watching YouTube for a better review of these with the power of video. Okay. This is going to be a relatively short show. I want to cover some listener emails real quick. And I only got about another 5 minutes to talk here. And then I got to wrap this up because I got another business appointment coming up soon. And next week's going to be probably a rather long show anyway because I'm going to have Gabe Suarez and John Payne on the program. Couple of emails. Charlie sent me a guy named Charlie sent me an email of a really interesting story. You got to hear this. Here it is word for word. It's not very long. Bob, yesterday my son was sick and we finally got him to bed around 8:30. I checked on him around 9 o'clock and all was well. So I thought I would go to bed since I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. About 9:40, the dog starts barking and runs out of the room. I immediately roll left and start to input the code for the gun safe next to my bed. When I get to the third digit, I hear my son scream a sound with no words of help, I'm scared. Fine and gross motor skills go out the window and I leave the gun safe and I run out of the room to protect him. So much for practice. I guess instinct over training takes place because when I heard him, I lost it. I run down the hall and my son is coming down at the same time and we scare each other to death. He's scared of me running at him and I'm trying to get control of the situation. Come to find out that the dog heard him vomit and that's what made her bark. She was wanting to let us know that there was a problem. Bottom line, practice your home defense just as much as you practice gun skills. Set your alarm for 2 o'clock in tomorrow morning and run a drill and see how well you do. This really woke me up to the fact that I need to drill myself and my family on situations at night. I spent a good part of the night thinking how stupid I was not to grab the gun first. I'm no good to my family dead, even if I were to get to my son fast. If an intruder kills me, I can't protect him, then can I? And he signed it, Charlie. Boy, isn't that the truth? I mean, you know, first of all, Charlie, thanks for you know, sharing that. That's kind of a scary situation. And, you know, there's a perfect example of how our thinking just goes to crap when we are threatened or a loved one is threatened or if we think somebody's being threatened. That's why you got to. And you know what? Your idea of setting the alarm clock at 2 o'clock in the morning and doing a drill, that's a great idea, Charlie. I mean, I think that's, you know, I think we should probably do that a couple times a month till we get it down. Again, thanks for sending that to me. Another email, Caesar from Charlotte. He says he never considered a Glock because they always bite the webbing of his thumb. And he saw my video on the Glock that I've had the grip reduction and the beaver tail added to, and he wanted to know what I thought of it. Or should he just get an M&P instead? Well, that's, you know, that's your choice as far as getting the M&P, Caesar, but I can tell you this. Here's what I like about getting a Glock and having the grip reduced. What I like about that concept is that you still get the benefits of owning a Glock. You still get the simplicity, the reliability, the availability of spare parts, the ability to work on the gun yourself, the ability to easily take a Glock armorer's course and be able to work on your gun. You get all those benefits. The reliability of a Glock, you get all of that, but you get a better grip that fits your hand better. And the biggest complaint about Glocks don't fit my hand. Okay, get the grip reshaped. You're not going to compromise the reliability at all if it's a well-done job. And I don't even think that would hurt you in court. Now, again, I'm not a legal expert. I'll defer to Masada Ayoub and many others on this. But if all you did was reshape the grip so that it fits your hand better, I don't think that's going to come back to bite you if you have to use your firearm. You didn't modify the trigger or any of that. All you did was just change the grip so that it fits your hand a little bit better. Law enforcement does it all the time. So, Caesar, I would say, unless you really got your heart set on the M&P, and the M&P is a fine gun, so don't send me any hate mail if you're an M&P lover. But, Caesar, I'm going to say that I would steer you towards the Glock and getting the grip reduction done so that it fits your hand a little bit better. Just kind of my 2 cents. And you still get all the benefits of the Glock. Now, next up, Lance from Moore Park, California. Hey, and by the way, folks, it really does help me when you send me emails if you tell me where you're from. You don't have to give me an address or anything, but if you just kind of give me an idea, it makes a big difference. Believe me, when you're on this side of the microphone doing podcasts and you're trying to answer people, it helps to know. And it also helps listeners to know, you know, the different types of thinking and questions that come in from different parts of the country and the world. And to you who listen to me internationally, you know, before I address this email, let me just tell all my international listeners. First of all, I am so glad you are listening to my show. It's really flattering when I have people from Finland and Australia and England, and I got one from Holland listening to me that emailed me recently, somebody else from Switzerland. I mean, that's cool. I mean, that really is, you know. For some average Joe Schmo like me that grew up in the upper Midwest and I'm just kind of just an average guy and everything, for me to get on this microphone, talk about guns, and have people from other countries where you can't even hardly own guns or you can't carry them very easily, man, that's just, you know, I don't know how to say thank you enough for tuning in to my show. So if you folks internationally want to send me some questions, feedback, what have you, just tell me what country you're from. That would be cool. So let's get into Lance's email from Moore Park, California. First of all, he wanted to thank me for doing a good job on the show and everything, and that's great. Appreciate the pat on the back there, Lance. Means a lot to me when you guys send in feedback. And by the way, feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, I take it all to heart, folks. I like it. Okay, he says he has a big concern about the process of after a self-defense event. And specifically, he wanted me to suggest self-defense lawyers, like legal defense networks and so forth. Very good question, Lance. You know, what to do after some kind of a self-defense event is something that's really not talked about a lot. And I haven't talked about it a lot on this show because there's one reason I haven't. I am not very good with that kind of stuff. I leave it to people who are pretty good. I happen to know an attorney here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that's pretty good with self-defense. He's preferred that I not give out his name and phone number, you know, unless I discuss it with him first and so forth. But he's pretty good with self-defense cases, so I've heard. I mean, I've talked to other people who have used him. They were different types of self-defense cases. They weren't involved in shootings, but I've talked to this attorney, and he has defended people before who have been in shootings, and he's been pretty successful. So I have a handful of his business cards. I keep one with me all the time, and that's how I handle it. At one time, I was a member of Prepaid Legal Services, and they had a couple of defense attorneys on retainer that were also pretty good. I'm not with them anymore, so I had to find a different private counsel once I dropped their service. I highly recommend, Lance, the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. ACLDN, the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. If you just Google that, you'll find the website. I have heard nothing but great things about them. But this is a great question, Lance, because, and I'm glad you sent this to me, because it's something that's not talked about enough. If you take some types of courses, a lot of them deal with this. A lot of training shooting training courses. I know that Masada U Group deals with this, and several others. They deal with this type of stuff, and they have courses that are specifically designed to talk to you about what to do in the aftermath. So I hope that answers your question, Lance, to the best of my ability. I can't get real specific, because you know what? I don't want to give out wrong information on this show. I like to try to be as accurate as I can, or leave it to other experts to set me a little more straight if I'm inaccurate. Anyway, and by the way, folks, I want to say this about making mistakes on this show. From time to time, I make mistakes. And I just made one recently. In the last podcast, a listener sent me a question. Can't remember his name because I'm driving right now. He asked me a question about getting a Ruger 22 pistol. And he asked me if he should get a Ruger 22-45 and to use that as a training gun. I guess to train for shooting a 1911. And my response was wrong. My response was that I didn't like the grip angle of the Ruger 22 pistols, and I confused it with the Ruger Mark III. Come to find out that I made that mistake. The Ruger 22-45 is very similar to a 1911. The controls are in very similar spots. The grip is very similar. And the Mark III is not. The Mark III is not very similar to a 1911. So, having said that, I will correct myself. I guess the 22-45 by Ruger might be a pretty decent training tool. However, I will say, because that same listener also asked me if he should get a 22 conversion for a training setup for his existing handgun. Yes, I would still recommend that you get the 22 conversion for your existing handgun. For several reasons, I touched on this a little bit in the last show, but I'll say it again. If you put a 22 conversion on your existing handgun, the controls are all the same. All you've done is changed out the upper. You've just changed out the upper so that it'll shoot 22s. And you change out the magazine too, but you know, everything else stays the same. The trigger press is roughly the same, a little bit different, but it's close enough. The trigger feel is the same. The trigger reach is the same. The grip of your handgun is the same. The magazine release button is in the exact same place. The slide release button is in the same place. And I'm specifically talking about Glockson 1911s. You know, I've shot those pistols with 22 conversions on them, and it's like shooting the real thing, except it's putting out 22 caliber projectiles instead of 9mm or 40 or 45. So I think even though, yeah, those Advantage Arms conversion kits are pretty costly, they're not cheap. You know, in fact, some people have said, well, I can almost get another handgun for that. Yes, you can. However, like I just mentioned, you don't get the benefit of training with the same pistol that you may have to defend your life with someday. So anyway, I wanted to correct myself. I did make an error in last week's podcast. Folks, I'll correct myself whenever it needs to be. So when I'm a little bit off on things, folks, I really appreciate the comments you folks send in to kind of guide me in the right direction, okay? Okay, another email has been sent in to me by Frank. After he complimented me on my podcast, he says he's new to shooting, and he's researching the purchase of his first handgun and getting his concealed carry license. He says the M&P9 Compact in 9mm is on his short list of possible handguns, and so he's very interested in my average guy's opinion. A fine pistol, Frank. That is a terrific gun. It is my second favorite handgun, the M&P 9mm Compact. When I was in Las Vegas recently, I got a chance to shoot my brothers. My brother has an M&P compact. He's had a real nice texturing job done on it. He's got excess big dot sights on it. He's given it a 1,000-round trigger job. The trigger feels real nice on it. I just don't like the reset. And I'm just kind of used to the Glock so much. But I got to tell you, I shot just as well, if not better, with that M&P 9mm compact. It is a terrific gun. And you know, it's a nice size. I like the size of the gun. What I mean is that it is smaller than a Glock 19, so it is easier to conceal than a Glock 19. Now, it's significantly bigger than a Glock 26. For those of you who think that the M&P 9mm compact is about the same size as the Glock 26, it's not. Now, I'm talking about a Glock 26 without the magazine extension to rest your pinky on. Even if you do put the mag extension on there, just try me. Go to a gun store and hold the two guns up next to each other. The M&P 9mm compact is a lot heavier and a lot larger than a Glock 26, enough to make a difference. But I kind of like the in-between size of that. When I grip that gun, I can get a good grip on it. I don't have any dangling pinky on that M&P. And like I said, if it weren't for the terrible reset, that might be my primary carry. And I know people say, well, Bob, you know what? You can do a trigger job on the M&P 9C. You know, you can get an Apex trigger kit, or you can send it to Smith & Wesson. Yeah, I can. But if I do that, now I'm carrying a gun with a modified trigger. Even if I put in an aftermarket Apex trigger kit, and I know that there's some law enforcement that's doing it, but I'm not a law enforcement guy. I don't want to be accused of messing with the trigger. If I should have to use my gun in self-defense, I don't want somebody saying, he modified the trigger, and he's a trigger-happy shooting maniac, and we need to put this guy in jail. I want to remove that argument. So I deal with the Glock stock trigger, which I happen to like anyway. And I also think there's way too much over-travel in the M&P 9, any of the M&P guns. The over-travel, unless you do a trigger job on it or change out some parts, the over-travel is far too much. But you know what? Hey, Frank, if that works for you, get it. If you love that gun, if it's on your short list and it works for you, it is a fine, fine pistol in just about every way. So I would recommend getting that. I hope that answers your question, Frank. Thanks for sending that in. Okay, and the last email here is more of a comment, and I want to share this with you. This comes from Brian. And again, I don't know where Brian is from, but he wants to send a comment to me about shooting lead bullets in a Glock. And, you know, you've heard it said that you should not shoot lead bullets through a Glock because of the polygonal rifling, and it can mess up the polygonal rifling. You know, most people that I have talked to say that that's true. I've talked to a few that say that that's not true, but I tend to believe that it is. So for you folks that know this kind of stuff, if you can tell me one way or another, or if you can tell me for sure, I guess what I'm interested in is I'm interested in an opinion out there and some proof as to why it's okay to shoot lead bullets through a Glock without changing out the barrel. Because according to Glock, you're not supposed to. Glock will come right out and say that you should not shoot lead bullets through their pistols. So, anyway, Brian makes some pretty good points here, so let me share them with you. The first point he makes is that there's really two schools of thought on this. School number one says, hey, don't do it. Just don't shoot the lead bullets, as I've just mentioned. Glock barrels use special polygonal rifling that's not found in most handguns, and the rifling is one of the main reasons why Glocks are pretty accurate guns. And by the way, for those of you who think the Glocks are not accurate, man, just talk to some people who have taken good training courses. You know, and I've heard reviews on training classes where by the end of the class they've got people shooting 75 yards, 100 yards, sometimes as much as 150 yards, and they're hitting pretty small targets at those distances. So Glocks are plenty accurate enough. If you're not accurate with a Glock, simply it's just because you don't know how to shoot it well. I'm sorry if that sounds a little harsh, but I firmly believe it's the truth. However, the same rifling can cause a high degree of leading when you're not using jacketed bullets. In other words, some lead from the bullet sticks to the inside of the barrel of the gun because of the way that the rifling is designed. And by the way, folks, I'm a big proponent of car pistols as well. They also use polygonal rifling in their higher-end guns. Now, too much leading can quickly lead to high pressures, which can cause the barrel and or the gun to break or even explode. Most people who weigh in on this subject fall into this category, including Glock, as I mentioned. Now, Brian says there's school number two that say, don't worry about it. You can shoot lead bullets. And their reasoning is that if you clean your barrel each time and do it well, every time that you shoot it, there's not going to be any significant leading going on inside of the barrel. And many, many people use lead bullets almost exclusively in their Glocks and don't have any problems whatsoever. But here's something important to remember. Not all lead is created equally. You can shoot lead in your Glock, but you should use hard lead from a reputable manufacturer. The homemade lead bullets from wheel weights and other recycled lead should be avoided. Just because one type of lead bullet or load could shoot fine in one Glock does not mean it will be safe in others. Each barrel is different and must be carefully checked first when using lead. You can, quote, shoot lead in a polygonal barrel. Got a little tongue-tied there, folks, as many Glocksters do. But you need to be aware of some potential dangers in using lead bullets, not to mention voiding your Glock warranty if you use non-factory ammo. And while it might be true, position number two, that you could get away with it if you are using properly cleaned barrels each time, why mess with it? I mean, seriously, why do that? I understand that lead bullets can save you some money if you're a reloader and you're trying to cut down on cost because you're shooting thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of rounds every year. I get it, okay? You can save some money when you're practicing. Wouldn't it be better to just go buy an aftermarket barrel that will allow you to shoot lead bullets? And, you know, buy a $100 aftermarket barrel and throw it in your Glock and shoot all the lead you want. You know, I mean, I don't understand why someone would mess with shooting all that lead if Glock tells you don't do it. You know, now when you carry, obviously you're probably going to carry jacketed bullets. So put the factory barrel back in your Glock, load it up with your favorite carry ammo, and carry it. And feel comfortable. I mean, Lone Wolf Distributors sells decent barrels, aftermarket barrels, for shooting lead through a Glock. Now, some people say, well, you know, Bob, the reliability is not as good with an aftermarket barrel. That could be so. But it's just for practice. Right? I mean, how many people are actually carrying lead bullets? I mean, you might be, and if you are, let me know. If you're actually carrying lead bullets, and that's your intent, you want to use them for concealed carry. 95% of the people I know that shoot lead bullets out of any pistol are shooting it because of the lower cost, because they reload, and that's the way that they reload, and they're trying to save some money. Over the long term, wouldn't it be better to just buy a $100 aftermarket barrel, stick it in your Glock, and shoot lead bullets to your heart's content, and then switch it out when you carry? It's not that hard to make that barrel swap. I don't know. That's just me. That's just my practical mind taking over. You know, let's face it, folks. I don't want to clean my gun every time I use it. All right? I mean, that's just me. I know I should, but I just don't feel like it. So if I was going to shoot a bunch of lead, to me, it'd just be easier to buy the $100 aftermarket barrel from Lone Wolf Distributors and shoot my lead and then pop the barrel out and shoot, put my factory barrel back in there when I'm done. So that's my two cents on that. But Brian, you know what? This was a great informative email that you sent me. Thank you. If any of you have any comments on this lead versus non-lead, get on the Gun Rights Radio Network forum, start a thread about this show. And by the way, since I'm talking about comments, before I sign off here, because I'm pretty much to the end of the podcast, for those of you who want to send me emails, as I mentioned earlier, to discuss with Gabe Suarez, please try to get them to me by this week, Friday, the 15th. We're going to do the interview this Friday night. So I'd like those questions by, 5 or 6 p.m. Central Time before Friday, or on Friday the 15th, or sooner. Okay, so hurry up and get your taxes done and get them sent out long before midnight on the 15th. Oh, don't you hate tax time? I just absolutely can't stand it. Hurry up and get them done and send me some pretty cool questions. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this, folks. I'm going to go ahead and sign off here of episode number 117 of the Handgun World Show. Think about some High Noon holsters. I think you're going to be impressed with them. And if you're searching for a good concealed carry holster and you just haven't found it yet, you know, I'm going to go ahead and say that they are the sponsor of this show. I don't have paid sponsors on here, but every once in a while, I do like to talk about people's products that I like and that I've used. And since High Noon Holsters was kind enough to send me these two holsters for evaluation, I'll go ahead and call them the sponsor of episode 117 of the Handgun World Show. Once again, their website, www.highnoonholsters.com, and I will go ahead and put a link in the show notes so you can go right to it with pictures of both of these holsters. Folks, my name is Bob Main. You've just listened to another episode of the Handgun World Show. The reason I carry a gun in a High Noon holster, by the way, is because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in, folks. I'll catch you next time. Safe shooting. Goodbye.
Come meet national gun rights leaders and your fellow grassroots activists at the 26th Annual Gun Rights Policy Conference in Chicago, Illinois, at the Hyatt Regency Airport Hotel on September 23rd, 24th, and 25th, 2011. This is your once-a-year chance to network and get an insider look and plan pro-gun rights strategies for the coming year. Past GRPCs have outlined victory plans and made public the latest firearms trends. They allow you a first-hand chance to hear movement leaders and make your voice heard. This year, we'll take a look at critical issues such as city gun bans, youth violence, smart guns, concealed carry, federal legislation, legal actions, gun show regulation, state and local activity. We'll also preview the upcoming court cases and revisit the U.S. Supreme Court Heller decision. The full roster of GRPC 2011 speakers has not yet been set. Past speakers include Ellen Gottlieb, Joseph Tartaro, U.S. Representatives Ron Paul, Chris Cannon, Bob Barr, and Gene Schmidt, Robert Levy Esquire and Alan Gura Esquire, counsel for the Heller case, Wayne LaPierre, John Lott, G. Gordon Liddy, Michael Reagan, Larry Elder, Ken Hamblin, and many others. Gun Rights Radio Network is a supporter of all the work the Second Amendment Foundation is doing with GRPC. So as a special bonus, the Gun Rights Radio Network hosts will be attending the 2011 GRPC and will be having the first live roundtable discussion. Gun Rights Radio Network needs your help to make this possible. So we are having a gun giveaway. We'll be giving away a new Smith & Wesson M&P 9C handgun to one lucky winner on June 31st, 2011. As an added bonus, everyone who enters the giveaway receives a free copy of Black Man with a Gun by Ken Blanchard just for entering. It's a $16.95 value. So go over to www.gunrightsradio.com/giveaway and enter today. That's www.gunrightsradio.com/giveaway. Also, make sure you go over to www.saf.org and make sure you're registered for the 2011 Gun Rights Policy Conference. Help us make this the biggest and best conference yet.